All right. Hello, everybody. This is Zach. I am. We're here with another breach of the week, and we are going into the seedy underbelly of election security. And I am joined by Davis. How's it going?
Hey, Zach.
And he's joined us before a while ago in another breach of the week, discussing some of the ridiculous stuff that he has to deal with sometimes on breaches. So Davis has a little bit of experience and a whole bunch of knowledge in dealing with election security. And I think broadly from like maybe your perspective, what do you consider sort of like the at least on the cyber front of or information security front, what is election security when it comes to like information security? Like sort of what do you view that as?
So first and foremost, you know, any computerized system, you know, should have security controls, right? So we can start with the generic, you know, having best practices for your any sort of infrastructure. You know, obviously, if there's more critical infrastructure,
which I would think voting machines would be considered critical infrastructure.
Sometimes it's voting machines are kind of it's kind of interesting because, you know, the way elections are set up, they're, you know, even on the, you know, for national elections, they're completely organized and maintained by the states. On an individual. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Independently. Right.
Yeah, there's no
national coordination on this, essentially.
You could go into vendors. I'm not 100% familiar with all the vendors out there. They're probably companies that you've never heard of before.
That's sure. The gist I've gotten from reading.
Yeah. Probably similar companies that make like, you know, metal detectors and things like that, like things that scan stuff at airports, yeah. you know, looking for X, Y, and Z. And, you know, it's just add in something tech or, you know, global pit, you know, global pit LTD or
right.
You know, just joking around, but yeah, it's, you know, so I think that is, as it's good and bad. You know, it's not something that anyone should live, you know, live, try, you know, try and true by, but like, you know, security through obscurity. If you have a bunch of systems and none of them are the same, well, it's going to take time for people to figure out one system or the other. So generally speaking, those election machines that we're talking, you know, about or that we see that have that, you know, they read the ballots, they scan them, you know, those things are, you know, are segmented, you know, they're air gapped. You need physical access. And so then you kind of go into kind of some of the physical, you know, access. Well, where are these, where are these devices stored? Where are they? You know, who has access to them, and why? You know, can you manipulate? You know, either the firmware, you know, how it responds to something. You know, what? How does it count the stuff? but you know, so when I think about it from that perspective, where voting machines, you know, generally would need to have some sort of physical access. There's some hype about it, but I think what it comes back to is that data has to go somewhere after. So it to me, it's less about the physical machines and more about that data being sent, you know, in, you know, where it's sent from and, you know, where, how it's transported. And so it's those systems that I think people don't, that doesn't really get talked about, where the, like who tabulates it, what database ultimately says, you know, oh, we counted everything, we put it all together. You know, I mean, I can imagine, you know, at one point someone was, you know, they got a phone call. They said, oh, we had, you know, 600 votes and right. Over in this county, they had, you know, 1700 for so-and-so. And someone actually grabs a calculator and they tabulate it up and they say, yeah, that's how many, because that's what I heard.
Right.
And so there's like some ambiguity to that. Right. And I think
sure.
People think about tracking it, but they think about like, oh, well, we'll use the system. I'll send it in an email or I'll send, you know, that information to
right, like an Excel sheet or something. Here's the voter rolls. Here's how they voted.
And you think about, you know, so you have a lot of kind of human intervention. And so I think when we look at it from maybe that perspective, there's, you know, there's obvious, you know, there'd be obvious, you know, questions. Well, all because you hear about like recounts, right? You know, there's back when, what was it, Gore and Bush, you know, the famous Florida recount, you know, over and over, you got to recount everything and it was different every time. It's like, how does that happen? Right. You know, I think it's important to have those paper trails. And I think it's important to have auditable digital, you know, computerized systems. But I think when we think about availability of that data and disruptions to that data, that's actually where I think is the real conversation. It's less about the machines themselves. The voting machines themselves are, and in my humble opinion, are a segue to the general public. Yeah, but it's segue to the general public.
The real threat
with
yeah
technology and cybersecurity kind of thing.
Okay. Like the tangible,
yeah,
right. That's where they feel it, right? That's as an end user, you look at your computer and that is what cybersecurity is to you.
Right. No one cared about cybersecurity until that DNS DDoS attack that, you know, threw off Amazon. Right. Why can't I order any, you know, right. Why can't I order my stuff? No one cared because they were using, an e-commerce site, you know, and traditionally they would have to go down to, you know, Barnes and Noble or Macy's and they had to get their clothes, you know, books from there or something.
So it's going to slap people in the face basically to understand the risk. And
yeah. And I think we look at the machine, we go, oh, well that's, you know,
yeah,
that's bad. But you know, it's really those machines, there are problems with them. Right. I went to DEF CON last year, you know, it was online this year and, you know, went stopped by the election hacking village and, you know, they were tearing things apart. You know, they were, you know, plugging
like physically
stuff in.
Tearing stuff apart.
Yep. Yeah. And then they would have their own kind of microcontrollers, you know, Raspberry Pi or Arduino, trying to figure out how things worked. Well, you know, so doing a lot of physical hardware, you know, manipulation of the protocols just to see how those things worked. And it's so that's the physical side to it, right? And then I think there's where that data is transported, and then there's kind of the tertiary part of all this, which is when you hear the word election hacking, I don't immediately go to voter I don't immediately go to someone changing vote counts. I think that's a scapegoat, right? Almost. It's really easy to say, well, that could cause all sorts of social disruption. And I'm like, yeah, but so could, you know, disinformation campaigns, so could, you know, outages and availability. When those things occur, they erode, it's like trust erosion, right? You know, you're abusing, you know, these trust relationships where, you know, well, my aunt, you know, Betsy or my uncle Bob said, that this happened and they linked some article, but I never read it.
Right. Right? It wasn't a real article. You know, it was probably article. Spread by some Russian troll factory.
And then it's the Russian trolls angle. Right. And you know, there's a lot of trolls on the internet. So there's no, you know, you're not saying
I'm one of
that.
Them probably.
Everyone is right. You know, everyone has that comment on some forum somewhere. And,
so that's an interesting point though. So I think that's something that, I think a lot of people are not putting together. And I'm going to hit on, so some of the things that you had talked about yesterday, we had sort of had this discussion in our, in a Slack channel yesterday. You've hit on a little bit. So like underfunded infrastructure. So certainly the fact, like you had alluded to, that most of these systems are managed at the best case scenario, state level, where at least there's some higher level of coordination. Generally, like states at this point, you know, have some degree of, you know, cybersecurity component to their IT infrastructure. You know, even little tiny Vermont, you know, it's not as strong as probably like New York State or something, but there's some oversight there. But in some places, it might be managed at the county level or even at the local level, depending on how they actually allow their voting systems to function or how they have that infrastructure set in place. And then these are usually managed by Secretaries of State's office, which a lot of us don't think about until election, and, you know, are probably not the most well-funded, you know, outfits in the state. You know, certainly we have Jim Condos in Vermont. He's awesome. The Secretary of State's office in the state is super forward-leaning, trying to do everything that they can to get people out there and vote. But he doesn't have a budget. Like, there's no money there for him to, you know, build this giant, massive IT setup that's highly secure, is going to guarantee, you know, like you said, it's got that audit trail that we can capture every single vote appropriately. And in fact, I think his take is, you know, we're going to do paper as much as possible because of that, as well as mail-in, which is a whole other discussion, you know, we could have. But that, you know, that sort of that the problem is that most states are not funded in any meaningful way to sort of secure this. And without a national, you know, agency that sort of provides grants or support or guidance, it is really left up to the locals to do how they want to do.
So, I mean, you kind of parallel this. If we kind of take a step back and look at it from more of like a kind of like maybe an omniscient angle or something, where the idea of like a social security number was never meant to be digitalized, right? It was not a number that should be used to authenticate your identity to literally everything. That was not in the scope at that time, right? And if you want to take that idea where you have a system, a piece of information, and it then, and you kind of overlay it into this digital world, you know, you're seeing some issues with, you know, the election system, the greater system, you know, as a whole, you know, who has registered to vote, you know, how that system handles that registration, you know, is that, you know, where is that, data, who stores that data, you know, even from that perspective, right? There's so many different angles that, you know, need to be reviewed. And and that's why I really kind of like to veer away from the actual ballot machines, is because it's really a minimal part of the greater discussion, you know. And I think there are, you know, when we think about, you know, post COVID, right, there's, you're talking about mail-in votes and things like that. And, you know, and then if you look on GitHub, there's a few kind of open source, like, hey, here's kind of this idea. It's a, you know, maybe a secure way to do election systems online. There's some interesting ideas coming out of this, right? And I think that's good. You know, that'll stimulate and scale the market, hopefully secure it, you know, as a whole. But I think about kind of what we talked about yesterday was, you know, you do have underfunded infrastructure in the sense that you create these systems and you get these machines and then you don't change anything. You just do. And any process that kind of goes through the motions is a classic risk for cybersecurity trust abuse. And I think that's classic social engineering. That's like, you know, phishing. If there's some process that is in place where, you know, I'm the CEO and I call so-and-so, make a bank transfer to this account, but no one verifies the CEO and they transfer $1 million to, you know, criminals, you know, in you know, some foreign country. Oops. You didn't have a policy in place where you have to say, well, then I have to, now I have to go and ask, you know, these three other people, they need to give me some sort of code. I need to have like a video call. I need to verify it's that person, you know, face to face. You need checks and balances. So I think those ideas too are very important to any system that just for years goes through the motions. You know,
Right. And you think, you're thinking about like these election machines, like these are probably purchased, you know, years ago, they're not being upgraded. You know, the software probably doesn't exist anymore. The companies may not exist anymore. You know, you're expecting the Secretary of State to manage this. And then at the same time, you know, what just happened to Twitter, a 17-year-old kid did social engineering and got access to this dashboard that managed the biggest Twitter accounts like out there. I mean, these are people that had millions and millions of people. And that was just done by basically, hey, can I have the password to this dashboard? And they're like, yeah, no problem, man. Here we go.
It's a permissions problem.
Yeah.
is what it comes down to, is people had too many permissions.
And if you think Twitter can't manage that, how the hell is like some, you know, Joe Schmo election, you know, manager out in, you know, somewhere where he's only doing this or she's only doing this once a year, or, you know, at best, and maybe they only pull the machines out for the general election, you know, so every 4 years, they don't remember the system, or they write the password on the back of the machine so that they don't forget, you know, to get into it, or it uses the default password. You know, it's just, those are untenable security policies, but what do you do? Like, you know, the other thing is a lot of these are largely volunteer or like very low paid, part-time people who sort of come in to help out during elections. And then, like you said, like that doesn't even get into the fact when you start to get into social engineering and outside forces. You know, of course, all of us, I think, you know, are aware at this point of nation state actors trying to manipulate us in all sorts of different ways and create, you know, fear and anxiety about these systems, or just like you said, to sort of break our trust with them. You know, that there's no hardware or software that's going to solve that problem. But it is a cybersecurity issue.
Yeah. So right? you could have, if you did have, you know, depending on the system, cause there are so many, you know, where you do have some sort of electronic, tabulation. And so maybe that is gapped, you know, there is some sort of air gap. You need a VPN, you know, credentials to access something. So, you know, there's some sort of authentication needed, you know. But it's the hosts are running it, right? if whoever's running the election, they show up with a laptop, right? And that laptop is ultimately used. They plug that in and they're able to send data, or the machine itself tabulates information, sends that to a database. Whatever electronic component is inside that system, you have to then look at your attack surface is massive, right? You're in a public place, you know, yeah. You have to ask the question, you know, who's watching that, you know, who has access to this, you know, when were there, is there credential sharing, you know, is that thing hardened so that, you know, they can't go and check their Gmail in between, at the end of the night when you have all the people that are slowly coming in, you know, to vote, you know, Did you lock it when you walked away, you know, to use the bathroom, you know, and these are all kind of classic things.
Right. And maybe just basic security stuff.
Yeah. And maybe that laptop that interfaces with some aspect of the election system cycle doesn't actually, you know, wouldn't actually be able to be, you know, used, to change votes. Right. But maybe it could be used to access systems, you know, that could be taken offline, and then all of a sudden you can't, you know, tabulate everything because that system's down. So then you have classic CIA, you know, the confidentiality, integrity, and availability, you know, so if you can't access the systems, they're not available. You don't know if the data was manipulated because you don't have any auditing, and, you don't know who has access to it, so it's not confidential, you know, per se. Right. So you have those breakdowns, and I think those kind of ideas, when you look at like the idea of just what an election is with freedom and democracy, you know, you don't want to people right. didn't look at it like that. Like
lowest common, like you need a low barrier of entry.
Yeah, and you hear about all those articles that say things like, well, no one commits voter fraud or something along those lines, or it's like such a small percentage. It never happens. Or,
yeah.
You know, you hear about those studies, and it comes back to like, having a database, right? Something that's audible, you know, who can change what, you know, what, where all those systems come together that makes it tricky. It's not to say like, I mean, it could be. We're talking about disruption and disinformation, right? If you had some sort of coordinator,
yeah.
Who is coordinating the an election in a local facility in the county, and their email was compromised, and then they email everyone that says, "Hey guys, something happened. We got to change locations," and everyone shows up at a different spot, and they tell them to call this number instead of his number, And you know, I mean, I'm kind of projecting and speculating, right? But then all of a sudden, everyone was told to show up at building X, but people that were actually supporting the system showed up at building Y. No one knew about that. And now you lose an hour or two of voting, right? So you think about like just those kind of weird things that could be manipulated in the physical world, and how that could, you know, from the digital world, you know, is I think is what it comes back to. And that's kind of where, you know, leads into another point of like people that are familiar with political science and the policy, you know, those policy leaders, you know, who are managing those systems, you know, they're not necessarily technical experts on those aspects, but they're interfacing right with those technical systems. That's the case for everyone, you know, in the 21st century. You have people using, you know, technology that can
do all sorts,
you
know, of harm.
Has more computing. Yeah. Well, it has more computing power than the first, you know, computer that went to the moon.
Right.
Right. So
just walking around with it.
So that's, yeah, we're just walking around with it. And then it's not to say that we're going to the moon with our iPhone. I don't want to say that because that's ridiculous, but it's just kind of the kind of sentiment there, right? That if you have people interacting with these systems and they don't really understand it from a technical perspective, they may not understand how they could be manipulated or abused. And those nuances, those social things where people say, oh yeah, well, you know, I trust everything I hear from X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And they don't question it because I've never had to, because the system has never changed.
Right.
So why would it? Someone can insert that trust and then abuse it. And you know, what do they yield? Who knows, right?
Right.
Going back, yeah, to the Twitter, you know, the Twitter hacker accessing those accounts, there was clearly some sort of trust abuse somewhere where someone was like, yeah, that's fine. Like whatever.
Here's the password.
Yeah, whatever the request was, that's fine. And they knew that and they didn't question it. That's my concern too, is that you have digital systems and people don't, and it's not a training thing, right? Well, I mean, it is training. It is always training at the end of the day. But it's having the people that are qualified for that new front, because those people are not going to be necessarily the same people that are qualified or understand all the other parts of the election, you know, in the system, in a human, you know, organic and technical perspective, right? I say the word system a few times. The election system is very organic. It's not just, you know, Ethernet cables and you know, firmware and motherboards.
Yeah, there's still a lot of meat bags walking around that have responsibilities in it.
Yeah, and so that's just important to know, right? And understand. And so, you know, what I think ends up happening is that with a lot of the disinformation campaigns, you know, tipping on like the Russian trolls and the bots, and those kind of ideas, you have people that are going to kind of jump in on that. They're going to partake in it, maybe for, you know, just for fun, right? And that's how, and they're going to, you know, look at it, you know, look at it from, they're doing their country a service. If you want to kind of go to the pitting of countries back and forth to each other, you know, because I mean, as much as you know, someone will say, you know, Russia meddled with the 2016 election, Russia says they didn't. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, there's also like, regardless of whether or not they're doing it for any sort of tactical or strategic advantage, there's also just the like, why wouldn't you do it? Like, you know, like if you can just sow a little bit of anarchy by, you know, introducing these little mine. I mean, like, I don't know that if I were to distill sort of a lot of what you're saying, what it kind of comes down to is that A, we all need to be sort of good consumers of data, good users of data, and that we should, you know, all have these basic practices. In like, you know, you referred to something simple as like closing the laptop lid. Like I remember working for a company or an organization prior to here, and I would walk around, and without fail, just because it got to be a practice, just for whatever reason, it drove me nuts. Yeah. I'd walk around the office and see people's computers open, logged in. You know, I could pull up to the keyboard and start accessing files some of these people were in pretty high up positions as well and had a lot of privileged information. But they were sort of old school. There wasn't good administrative controls built into the computers. And essentially they had local control and they turned off the sleep because they didn't like logging in over and over. And, you know, so that was just the case. You complicate that by using, you know, potentially older technology. You know, certainly state budgets have not gotten any bigger over the last couple of years. They might be using old systems that don't have the best protection built in. You know, it's just there seems like there's so many endpoints where there's opportunity for failure. But at the end of the day, a lot of it just comes down to, like, you know, be good at just basic cybersecurity. And that's where we're going to leave it. Be good at cybersecurity. We are actually going to split this episode into two episodes because there's about another 25 minutes left to go. And next week we'll be talking about how to work on securing elections, some philosophical and strategic ideas regarding election security, and why at the end of the day it comes down to people, as many situations in cybersecurity do. If you are involved in election security, contact us at New Harbor Security. We will be happy to help you secure your election equipment, test your election procedures, give you best practices. This is obviously in the interest of everyone who votes or lives in the U.S. And we, of course, want to be part of the solution. So contact us at www.newharborsecurity.com. If you have ideas for the show, contact us at pwned@newharborsecurity.com and be sure to like, share, subscribe, all that fun stuff. And stay tuned next week while we finish up with Davis.